Educators want to stay fresh with literacy instruction, but are so busy with students, they don't always have the time. All year long, Choice Literacy publishes and delivers the best K-12 literacy practices so that educators can grow their students as readers and writers with choice in literacy. Welcome to the Big Fresh Choice Literacy Podcast. I'm Ruth Ayers. This month, Dana Murphy is the featured contributor at the site. Dana is an elementary teacher outside of Chicago. I am so excited for you to get to know her. This week, she offers the lead essay. It's called Leaning Into Play. It's written by Dana Murphy and read by me, Ruth Ayers. My family visits an indoor water park in Wisconsin Dells every year for a short, early spring vacation. It's a popular destination, and although we try to beat the spring break rush, we inevitably face some long lines. I actually love waiting in water park lines because the majority of people don't have a phone with them, so family conversations and laughter take priority over scrolling and screens. The slides at this particular water park aren't for the faint of heart, so it's a long climb to get to the top so that you can enjoy the trip down. Climb a few stairs, wait, talk and laugh, climb a few more stairs, wait. It was in such a line 2 years ago that I noticed a ledge against the wall, fairly high up toward the ceiling of the water park. I don't know what the ledge's original purpose was, but it had become a target for ponytail holders. I chuckled to myself and told my daughters, "Look over there. People must be trying to fling their ponytail holders from this line onto the ledge. There must have been hundreds of elastic holders scattered on the edge." I had so many questions. Who was the first person to fling their holder onto the ledge? How long did it take before someone else tried? How long had the hair ties been there? Was anyone from the water park going to clean them up? My daughter Maddie wanted to try the stunt herself, but wasn't quite willing to forego her ponytail for the rest of the day. The line eventually moved, and we climbed a few more stairs. Imagine my surprise the following year when we returned to the water park. Same line, same slow crawl up the wooden stairs. I had actually forgotten about the ledge when something red caught my vision. I turned to look and let out a joyful, "Ha!" when I saw what the water park staff had done. Apparently, they had noticed the ledge full of abandoned elastic hair ties and had decided, rather than expending their energy on cleaning it up, to make it a game. There sat a large red and white target with a black peg sticking out of the bullseye. It was a challenge, an invitation to play. Could you slingshot your ponytail holder onto the bullseye? It looked like only a handful of people had done it, though many had tried and failed. People entered the line with a ponytail and left with their hair hanging down their back, unable to resist the challenge. I think of that target often in my classroom. How often do I fight against the current? How often am I trying to figure out how to clean up the hair ties rather than just making it a game? This year, while I'm teaching 100% remote, I'm trying to lean into the unexpected and find moments to play. I had some days when the turned off cameras and muted mics began to take a toll. Rather than admonish the kids for not participating, I downloaded a Cricut sound effect on my phone and played it during the silence. When a student insisted on having her dog, Rocco, on her lap and on camera for every single lesson, I added his name to our class roster. What about you? What is something that could take a toll on you this year, but you're claiming it as an opportunity to play? This week, we discover hidden treasures within a year of pandemic teaching. And our contributors are sharing the ways that they are making the best of things. I am so excited to share this issue with you. There are several articles in our free-for-all section that you won't want to miss. Make sure to check out the Choice Literacy Book Club because Matt Renwick selected the picture book Neville by Norton Jewster and illustrated by G. Brian Karras for our April read. We hope you'll join along with the hashtag Choice Literacy Book Club. Mandy Robeck shares how she adjusted her mindset for her classroom design as she prepared her classroom according to the ever-changing COVID guidelines. Mandy approached things as a minimalist classroom. Bitsy Parks is a first grade teacher clear across the country from Mandy, but they were in a writing group together. This week, Bitsy returned to her classroom for the first time in a year. As she prepared her classroom, Bitsy talked about how Mandy's article and Mandy's mindset of a minimalist classroom really helped her. We continue to offer videos on the site, and this week, special ed teacher Julianne Hauser meets with a small group of fifth graders to help them build skills for tracking thinking. You'll see Dana Murphy in action with excerpts from a writing share circle. Dana explains this share in the article that's in the free-for-all section. We are thrilled to welcome new contributor Gwen Blumberg with her article, Coaching Through the Student Door. This is in the Leaders Lounge, and I love the way that Gwen is considering how to meet teachers' needs and provides an asynchronous lesson for some new curriculum. In a coaching minute, Principal Lee Snyder talks about the change process with teachers. Don't miss our new courses. We have several field experience courses. We think that classroom observations are some of the most valuable learning experiences, and our field experience collection is organized by topics and grade levels, including more than 15 unique field experiences. These courses are free to members. Finally, you're going to get to know Dana Murphy even more as she joins the podcast. Dana and I talk about her mindset for this year, and she discusses more in depth her attitude of joy and playfulness. We talk about voice feedback for writers, digital reading notebooks that allow her students to collect multimodal entries, and the way that she has nourished a classroom community built on student collaboration this year. You are going to love getting to know Dana. So this year has just been one adjustment after another, and you have this new article on Choice Literacy about the good things that you've learned after a year of pandemic teaching. In a time when it's so easy to wish things were different, you opened the article with this line that really struck me. You wrote, "While there are certainly some aspects of remote teaching I am eager to abandon, there are some changes I made to my teaching practice that I plan to carry with me when I return to my physical classroom." Will you tell us, after a year of so much chaos, how you landed at this mindset?
Sure. I mean, Ruth, this year has been chaotic for me professionally. I started the school year going into, I thought I was going to be teaching first grade. And then last minute, a week before school started, they switched me to fourth grade. And then about 1.5 months, 2 months into school, I got moved to sixth grade. So our district has been doing a lot of shuffling, just trying to, meet the needs of families and handle this pandemic. But somehow through all of that, this year has been in a lot of ways actually enjoyable to me as far as teaching goes. And I think I attribute it to a number of things. One is I think this year more than ever, I approached the school year and my students with more empathy than I ever have before. I have two girls. They are right now, they're 9 and 11 years old. And my heart was breaking for them, all of the things they were missing out on. They weren't able to return to school in person at the beginning of the year. And I just had a lot of empathy for kids in general. And I think that made me a kinder and more understanding teacher than I have been in the past, to be honest. Also, teaching during this pandemic, I have been teaching 100% remote all year, really got me out of a rut that I think I didn't know I was in. I couldn't rely on my old teaching practices and any of my old lessons. I had to try new things. I was being forced to try new things. And I was really pushed out of my comfort zone. And to my delight, I found that a lot of them worked. And lastly, I would say that I attribute this mindset to the kids that I am teaching this year. They are just happy and thriving in this remote environment. And in that way, they have inspired me to show up every day ready to work and with an attitude of happiness to meet theirs.
Dina, that's such a beautiful approach. And I think we saw a little bit of this mindset in the lead that you wrote last week about just the playfulness that you have with kids and the way that instead of getting upset or angry, you keep turning to play. So you had described in your lead that when kids weren't talking, you were playing sounds of crickets and how that made kids laugh in response. And I just think it's that lighthearted, happy approach that allowed you to see some of the things you talked about in your article.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Ruth. It was, you know, maybe in the beginning it was forced, but it turns out that that attitude of playfulness and joy has saved me this year. And I made a promise to myself that I will keep that attitude next year when I return to in-person teaching.
Well, your article definitely focuses on some of those ways that just not only have you lifted your practice, but you've done it with joy and with wisdom. So one of the things you write about in your article that you say you want to keep moving forward with is voice feedback to writing. How did this transform your feedback in writing workshop?
So leaving voice comments, my students were turning in all of their work digitally, and then I started just leaving voice comments. I know there's several ways to do it. I was using an extension called Moat. At first I did it to respond quicker. I had 51 students and it was a quick way for me to leave comments. But what I found was that my feedback on their writing was so much more authentic than it was when I was typing comments. And that's what I came to really love about it. I mean, there's such a difference. If I were to type to you, Ruth, I really enjoyed this lead. There's such a difference than if you hear me say, Ruth, I loved this lead. So I just felt like they could hear my authentic feedback in my comments. And I absolutely loved it. I will definitely continue doing that next year.
That really made a lot of sense to me when I was reading your article and just the nuances of what we hear when people speak and how much of that can be lost through a screen. And I'm looking forward to trying out some of that voice feedback too, because it's not something that I've done much of in the past. And although drawn to the fact that it could be faster, I think at the heart of it is that it's super authentic and kids can hear it. And even when you're giving some redirection or some suggestions for revision, I bet they can just hear in your voice that the writing is worth doing some of this extra work with.
Absolutely. And I just think it comes across gentler, that kind of redirection, when they can hear it in my voice. I love it.
So you also shifted a practice in reading workshop with digital reading notebooks. So as I was reading your article, it seemed this stemmed from wanting kids to experience rich book clubs and you needing a place to collect and share their thinking. How did you make digital reading notebooks work?
So in the past, when I was teaching in person, their reading notebooks, I realize now, were used to communicate between me and a student. Every now and then we might put our notebooks out on the desks and do a gallery walk and see what other kids were writing, but really they were used, you know, as I would just be able to see what the student was thinking. And so I made the shift to digital notebooks. We just used Google Slides. We found a template that looked just like a notebook, and each student has a section of the slides, which means they just have multiple slides that they claim as theirs that they can write on. And now the notebooks are used between students, in between their book club meetings. All of the kids who are reading the same book are in one notebook. And I love it because the students are no longer responding to reading for me, but they're responding to reading and their classmates can see it and respond to it. And it has just allowed for so much more student collaboration. And the other thing I love about it is that it is multimodal. So students who really don't love to type a lot, they have been making Screencastify videos. Students have used Vocaroo to leave just an audio note of what they're thinking. Some students have taken pictures of the book they're reading and marked it up with digital tools and pasted that in the notebook. So the range of student responses is amazing. And kids who before were reluctant to write in a notebook now have other options. So it's been wonderful. I will definitely use those next year when I return to in-person. I'll give each book club a digital notebook. It's been great.
As I was listening to you talk, I was like, it's like everything that we know about the power of audience and the power of choice, even in, I don't know if genre is the right word, but in deciding how to respond and having all those options. And then when I was reading your article and listening to you talk a little bit about it, it just really lifted the level of the collaboration that kids were having. And I think it's that power of knowing it's going out into the world for a real reason.
Yes, it's been awesome.
Well, that leads right into the last section of your article, which is about student collaboration. And something that you mentioned when we were talking before, I think in one of our virtual writing groups, is you had mentioned how this year's class is such a close-knit community and that kids are talking to one another more than ever before. In what ways did you nourish this collaboration?
Ruth, this is such a hard question for me to answer because I think it's one of those things that's happening in your classroom. And when someone asks you to articulate it, you almost don't know what you were doing. You just know that it's there. But I will just tell you that some of the things, some of the changes I've made to my mindset and to my classroom this year is I definitely... you know, my students are logging on to school from home. So there is sometimes what some might call chaos. There are a lot of pets. There's kids who have their camera off and then walk away from the computer. There is younger siblings and just a lot of different things going on. And I just leaned into it. I just knew I couldn't, like, quote, fight against it. And so I just accept it. And like I wrote about in my big fresh lead, I added the dog's names to my class roster. And so I just made a decision this year that I was gonna lean into it. And I think it just made the kids happy. And we all got to know more about each other than we ever would have in the classroom, because we could literally peek into each other's homes. A change I made this year was I assigned class jobs right away at the beginning of the year and were digital. And so it was hard for me to think what could important class jobs be, but two that have made all the difference are I have a greeter and that person is responsible as kids log on to the Zoom. They say good morning to each kid and greet them by name. And that just is just such a welcoming way to sign on in the morning. And we also have a joke teller. And that person starts out every morning by either telling us a joke or showing us a meme. And it's just really allowed us to start our day with happiness and positivity. I have a prize wheel for, you know, we have various things in my district. They have to get so many minutes on a digital program. And rather than rewarding them with, you know, quote unquote stuff, I have a prize wheel full of just silly, ridiculous classroom games we can play online, and they love it. They're excited every week when we spin the wheel and they see what they won. And so I think it's just that kind of play that has really brought us together. And because we are a close-knit community, they're more willing to collaborate, and they share their thinking about their reading, and they openly share their writing, and they tackle hard math problems because it's a joyful, happy, welcoming digital space. I was really afraid this year when I started teaching remotely. I was afraid of the alienation kids might feel not being in a classroom. And so I overplanned for lots of time to talk together and laugh, and for kids to be talking more than I would be. And all of that, I think, has just, again, turned our classroom into a place where kids feel accepted and happy, and they're willing to collaborate.
Dina, you started answering that question by saying, you know, you weren't really sure, and then you just unfolded this, what's happening in your classroom bit after bit to really nourish that collaboration. It's just so full of wisdom. And, you know, we have a choice every day to choose to be happy or to get worked into all the things that aren't going quite the right way. And you just outlined each of these choices that you've made throughout the year and what a difference it's made for your students and the way they interact with one another.
Yeah, it really has, Ruth. It's really been surprisingly just delightful.
So Dina, let's switch gears a little bit, because you used to serve as a coach. And at that time, you created a course for the site about coaching cycles. I'm excited to relaunch this course because coaching cycles are a great way to be effective as a coach. What's one thing you'd like people to know about this course?
I'm really proud of that course, Ruth, and I hope that I do hope that coaches will spend the time going through those materials. One thing I would like coaches to know is that it's very practical, that course. You know, I was a teacher for years and years before I became a coach, and I wanted a clearly defined role as a coach. And through the use of coaching cycles, I was able to have a format that really worked for me. And when I made that course, I dumped all of my wisdom into it. So it's very, very practical.
Those courses are such a deep dive into the site. And I think you're right. When people spend the time, they are just going to be full of information. And that piece that it's so practical, it's something they can turn around and do in their schools right away, is the thing that I'm excited about also with that course. You know, our whole conversation today has kept circling back to giving kids a chance to talk and giving them choice in literacy. I'm wondering what's one last bit of advice you have to offer more choice in literacy to students?
I would say my last bit of advice is to meet the kids where they are. I sometimes, looking back on past years of teaching, tried to teach the kids I wish I had in front of me and not the ones who were actually sitting there. And I think just accepting the kids really who they are and just meeting them right where they are makes all the difference in the world. So accept the books that they love, accept their attitudes and identities as writers, and don't try to change them or teach in a way that doesn't meet their needs. Just really get to know your kids and meet them right as they come.
That's such great advice. It reminds me, my very first principal, when I started teaching, he used to say, you know, parents are sending us the best they have. And our job is to welcome them and love them and teach according to who's in our room. And that's what I was reminded of when you said, you know, I used to teach according to what I wish were there. And now just getting to know kids and celebrating who they are, because it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it is. And it just makes, it makes the classroom such a happier place, and it makes me such a happier teacher.
Dana, thanks so much for spending time with us and sharing a little bit more about the background and just your thought process as you're approaching your teaching this year.
Well, thanks for having me, Ruth. I love sitting down to talk to you anytime.
At Choice Literacy, we know that you want to be an educator who makes students' lives better through literacy. In order to do that, you need access to comprehensive literacy practices delivered in a way you will actually use. With over 150 in-the-field contributors, we understand the pressure to reach a variety of needs and not enough time to do it, which is why we hold true to workshop tenets like choice and share practical ways to plan and deliver literacy instruction straight to the point of student need. You can find links to all of the articles discussed in the show notes, or sign up for the Big Fresh so you can have the links delivered directly to your inbox. Keep growing readers and writers by offering choice in literacy.